Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I connect with Steven Weber, and this guy I really appreciate connecting with. He is one of my favorite people that I've met through the awesome Twitter chat, hashtag LeadUpChat Saturday mornings. He is such a wealth of knowledge, talking about leadership developing over time, how to invest in others to build their leadership capacity, and what novice principals need to know about teacher voice, student voice, and parent voice. Thank you so much for listening. I never take it for granted, and enjoy the show. Steven Weber is the Associate Superintendent for Teaching and Learning with Fayetteville Public Schools, Arkansas. He was selected as a PDK Emerging Leader, and his blogs have been recognized as top 10 blogs on ASCD Edge. He was elected as the Vice President of North Carolina PDK and as a board member with North Carolina ASCD. He was a finalist for the BAMI Award as a Curriculum Director. Weber has served as a classroom teacher, principal, and curriculum director. He also worked as a curriculum coordinator with the Arkansas Department of Ed and the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. He is passionate about supporting teachers, administrators, and curriculum leaders. He presents at state and national conferences and engages audiences in conversations that support curriculum design, school transformation, and college and career readiness. Connect with Weber on Twitter and ASCD Edge. Links in the show notes. So, Steven, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
I started off working in sports camps when I was a teenager and into my college years, baseball and basketball camps around the United States. And then I eventually led to working at Doyle Baseball School. And that took me all over the United States, from Florida to Texas, Mississippi, Missouri. I just went all over the United States working baseball schools with Doyle, and they're based out of Florida. And working with baseball and basketball, it allowed me to work with students of all different backgrounds, and I realized I enjoyed working with students. And so I started as an elementary education major after graduating from University of Arkansas at Little Rock.
Elementary ed, so was one of your first classes kindergarten, first grade?
No, I didn't start that young. It was fifth and sixth grade.
Okay.
They had K-6 at that time, and it was fifth and sixth grade social studies.
That's perfect. My first teaching job was sixth grade. But I'll remember when I got my master's, earned my master's degree, I was working with early childhood education in those kindergarten and preschool classes. I was just amazed at really actually the rigor and the creativity found in those classrooms. I don't know why I didn't anticipate it, but it blew my mind.
I have a lot of respect for the teachers that teach at kindergarten, first, second grade level. The students have a wide range of abilities, and they're just constantly thinking on their feet, trying to reach the needs of every student.
Absolutely. Steven, how would you describe your leadership style, and how did you develop this style?
That's a great question. Leadership develops over time, and I feel like over the last 20 years, I've watched leaders, and I've been fortunate to be around some great education leaders, and they've invested in me. So at this point in my career, I try to invest in others the way I've been had the opportunity to be invested in. I've been around assistant superintendents, superintendents. I've also been around some great education consultants. I've had some opportunities to sit down and have lunch and dinner with people who are actively involved in curriculum leadership. And each of those opportunities have kind of shaped the type of leader I am. I'm a big John Maxwell fan, as you know, and John Maxwell has influenced me through his books, his CDs, his YouTube videos. I've seen him twice in person. Actually, at the end of this month, my team is going to see John Maxwell. It's on a pre-recorded webinar, but we're very excited to just see John Maxwell and learn from him.
What does investment look like now that you're giving back and pouring into younger leaders? Take me through like a typical day or how you do that with a younger leader.
I think you're always on the lookout for others. When I was in my 20s, it was an inward focus. So that inward focus leader is, how can I read a book? How can I go to a conference? How can I win an award? How can I get a plaque for my wall? And that outward focus leadership is more, where are the leaders in this school? Where's that young teacher leader that can serve on a district committee? Where's that teacher leader that could go to a state conference and maybe I could help that person with their first state conference presentation, just like an assistant superintendent took me to a state conference and kind of co-presented with me and helped me through my first presentation. Who can I encourage? Who can I uplift? Is there a building principal who needs something? And sometimes it's just listening. Sometimes you go in a building principal's office and they just need to talk about what's been going on in their school and you listen. So you're always trying to invest in others. And when you have that outward focused leadership, you end up really, the reward sometimes is back to yourself. It sounds selfish, but when you're focused on others, it's like giving money to somebody else. If you help someone else, then they benefit, but you feel the reward on the inside in your heart. So I just love giving to others, and I love knowing that I had a strong foundation of leaders who invested in me. So I almost feel like I owe it to the profession to give back to others.
Do you have a favorite memory of when maybe one of those superintendents brought you to a state presentation or some other way that they developed your leadership capacity?
I have two memories that come to mind. One is when I was at a conference and I went up to the speaker and said, I'd like to have lunch with you, just a private lunch. Is it okay if we go over here and we talk about curriculum design? And that was Benna Kallick. And I'm talking to Benna Kallick, and she's telling me about her experiences with curriculum mapping and telling me about the pitfalls she's seen in school districts, and she invested in me. So I doubt Benna Kallick remembers that, but that's a time in your life where you think, wow, I'm sitting here with someone who's written books, someone who's a consultant, yep, and someone who has been a lot further down the road than I have, but they're an invest in me so I can go back and invest in teachers. So when you have opportunities like that, it gives you more confidence because you've met face to face with someone who's been there and done that. The second opportunity I think of is I was given the opportunity at a young age to work at the Arkansas Department of Education. And there was a consultant there. I was the social studies consultant. There was a science consultant named Bill. And Bill took me out to a few school districts and kind of showed me how to work with teachers and administrators. Up until that point, I'd never really worked outside of elementary education. He showed me how to work with people. And it wasn't just about being the young guy with all the content knowledge or the book knowledge, because somebody who was twice my age would be in the audience. So it was about building relationships and connecting with the audience. And he was a master at that. So taking me under his wing and taking me out to some state conferences and taking me out to some local school districts and showing me that it's not all about walking in and showing people what you know, but it's about listening to their needs and then trying to support them. And I think that's stayed with me ever since I was about 28 years old, is my job is to support others. How can I help you rather than what can I do for you? How can I tell you how much I know?
Yeah, that's an interesting shift, you know, in the mind of, I guess, you know, sharing all these great things, right? That here's how you should do it. You know, let me see your school. This is how to rearrange it, to taking a posture of listening and figuring out really how can I help. And almost sometimes I bet letting people just figure out almost the solution by themselves just by being a great listener and asking great questions.
Right.
So Stephen, you know, I've been a little nice, so asking about leadership styles and all that kind of thing, how you define it. What would you say has been your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
I think my worst leadership mistake at the time, I didn't know. At the time, sometimes you think that you're doing everything right, but 20 years removed from the fact, you reflect and you learn from the lessons learned. I was a consultant at a young age, like I said. I worked at the Arkansas Department of Education, and then I had an opportunity to work at the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction, and I worked with social studies teachers. When I would go out to schools, I would often have pre-canned presentation, and I would do most of the talking. And now as a presenter, I incorporate more turn and talk to your neighbor, more inquiry, and more group participation, more facilitative leadership. At the time, I didn't have that skill set, the facilitative leadership, so I had to just rely on the content. And I think I felt like, well, for me to get a good evaluation as a presenter, I got to show the audience how much I know. And looking back on that 20 years later, if I knew then what I know now, I would have incorporated more gallery walks and more interaction and more basically using their expertise rather than trying to show the audience my expertise. You have 40 social studies teachers in a room. Each teacher's taught about 15 years. You need to tap into that as a presenter rather than try to show them how much you know. And so it's humbling now to say that, but looking back, I didn't know what I didn't know.
You know, I've heard it said a different way too on some podcasts that have to do with actually developing products and services to help serve people. But the idea is to make your customer, in this case, the person that is participating in your presentation, you know, you take on the role of Yoda, but they become Luke Skywalker. So they're the star of the show, you know, and you make them, they become the hero. So just whatever you can do to get in the background and make them feel like the hero, that's what you need to do.
And when I think about the leaders who have invested in me the most, that's what they do.
Exactly. Yeah, that's good stuff. Hey, Stephen, during the pre-chat, you know, we were talking about learning spaces and how that's an interesting topic to you and how that improves teaching and learning. So tell me a little bit more about learning spaces, some of the great stuff you've seen in different districts, you know, around the country, and how you think about learning spaces.
I'm passionate about the topic of learning spaces because I think too many times we try to teach students the way we were taught. We had desks, so they need to sit in desks. And what I'm starting to find is teachers are finding a lot of benefits from flexible furniture, such as balls, cubes, bean bags, beach chairs, lawn chairs, carpets, rugs, sit on the floor, lower the tables, elevate the tables, standing desks. And when students have choice, they're more relaxed. I love to walk into a classroom and see first graders with very relaxed body language because they're sitting in a chair of their choice, sitting at a table of their choice, and sitting with a group of their choice, whether that's three people or five people or in isolation, because different tasks that we assign students require different settings. When I go into Barnes & Noble, sometimes I see people sprawled all the way across the floor and I have to skip an aisle just to go to my book.
Yeah,
because they're so relaxed. Or I see people on a couch. I see people drinking coffee, and there's four people talking about their favorite book. I like to see that same classroom reflected when I walk into a first grade class or a 12th grade class. I like to see that the students have choice in their furniture, and I like to see that the students are relaxed. I think when we're relaxed, we're better thinkers. Just like right now, as we're having this conversation, we're two states away. I can promise you I'm not sitting at a desk.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a really great point. And I'm curious, too, if any school leaders are thinking, oh, but I don't have the budget. You know, I can't order a bunch of new furniture and that kind of thing. How would you answer maybe that critique or that obstacle? What kind of creative things have you seen in terms of learning spaces where it might not require a huge budget?
Hawk Ridge Elementary and Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools in Charlotte, North Carolina is the best example I've seen of a whole school conversion. And they have things like old kitchen tables. Somebody was a newlywed, and 10 years later, they were going to sell their table in the garage sale. So they brought the kitchen table and the chairs in, painted them neon colors, and the kids used the table. I've seen old office furniture. Instead of the principal's desk going to the recycling, they use a principal's desk in the middle of the media center. I've seen patio furniture from somebody's house that's old, and they take it and use it in a classroom. In North Carolina, beach chairs were really popular. I moved here to Arkansas recently, but in North Carolina, everybody goes to the beach, and then when they come home, they sell their beach chairs in a garage sale. So you can easily find beach chairs at the end of the summer in garage sales. And I've also seen lighting. I think lighting is important. People can get lamps or lights from Target for about $20 or less. A lot of school districts go to IKEA. And a lot of this works for elementary schools. As you get into middle and high school, you have to almost buy some of the furniture because the kids are bigger. But elementary schools, using the milk crates, turning them upside down, and putting a pad on top. And the most unique seating I saw was recently in Fayetteville, in our school district, in Fayetteville Public Schools. Miss Rimmer has taken tires like we used to play on when we were kids on the playground with red, yellow, blue, green. And then she's put a pad in the middle of the tires. And the students told me that's their favorite seating, is sitting in the tires. So it's a table that's been lowered all the way to the ground, and you sit on the tires to do your work. So they also have a futon in that classroom. So there are ways to get donated or used furniture, and you have to also work with your local fire marshal and your fire code and your building principal. So I'm not trying to say do something that isn't allowed in your state, but there are ways to support student understanding. And then you go to green screen, makerspace, a Lego wall. There are additional things, almost like an add-on, that you can do. And I'm so excited about learning space because I feel like you have to ask yourself, what are the learning goals or what is the learning target for this classroom? Then you have to step back. And when you step back, you have to say, does this classroom allow kids to reach those learning targets? And if not, then we need to redesign the learning space.
Yeah, I like that question. What is the learning target for this classroom? And does the classroom allow students to reach that target? As a principal, I know one of the biggest challenges that I face is figuring out how to raise more money for my school so I can impact my students and help them get the resources, the programs that they desperately need. That's where School Spirit Vending comes in. And I know the owner, Matt Miller. He's an excellent guy. He was a guest on episode 5. And I'm encouraging you, the listener, to check out School Spirit Vending in their hassle-free year-round fundraising program at schoolspiritvending.com. Stephen, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
I think you have to go with teacher voice. You really have to listen to the teachers in the building. And you also have to go with student voice. And then finally, family voice. Too often as a building principal, you want to make your mark on a school. You want to come in and run the school and really kind of get some things going so you can say you transformed the school or you made a difference. But if you follow it that way, you'll probably end up looking back in 5 years if you leave that school and a lot of things change because people aren't going with you. It's almost the analogy of climbing the mountain by yourself. And when you get to the top, there's no one to celebrate with. So you want to take students and families and teachers with you, whether it's learning space, formative assessment, professional learning communities, whatever you're trying to implement, you need to try to implement it because it's good for students. But you also need to do it with people, not two people.
Yeah, with people instead of two people. That's good. You know, I need to hear that going through my first year as a principal and definitely having ideas that will impact student learning, in my opinion, right, in a positive way. But I need to keep my ear to the ground, too, and hear what my people say they need and then try to find solutions to whatever challenges they may face. If you could create one class to add to schools that currently is not taught, that you know of, what kind of class would you create?
I think a lot of people would say a makerspace or a genius hour lab or an East lab, but for me, it would be personal financial literacy. I don't know across the United States why personal financial literacy is not a required elective that every student takes, and it varies from state to state. But if we're trying to teach kids college and career readiness, it seems to me like the first time they run into someone who tries to offer them a credit card really isn't the first time they should have to make those life choices, because too many of us got that free bag of M&Ms at our freshman year of college, and that's when we learned about debt.
They had M&Ms. We only got lousy T-shirts. Yeah, right. How many credit cards do you think you signed up back then in college?
I think 2 or 3. I can't remember, but we're sending students into a difficult world, and it cost a lot more to live than it did when we were 18 years old. So it's our responsibility to teach students financial literacy. And some school districts do it well, and other school districts, it's still an elective where the student can choose to take it. I just think that's a life skill that should be mandatory, and I don't think it should be woven into English or social studies. I think it should just be a full course.
Yeah, I'd love to learn that or even teach it. Shoot, I signed up for a couple cards myself back then and got some nifty T-shirts. Didn't get any delicious M&Ms, but those are expensive T-shirts, and fortunately, at some point, I met Dave Ramsey, you know, through the radio and got myself, you know, out of debt that way. How would you say that you avoid distractions and stay focused on your day-to-day job?
I just am really laser-focused at my work. I'm constantly going from one meeting to the next. I don't think distractions are a problem for me as a leader. My problem is slowing down and pausing to reflect. How did I lead that meeting? How did I communicate with that parent? Did I offer enough time for the student to speak, or did I just go in and tell the student my agenda? At the principal's meeting, did I allow enough time for reflection for the principals, or was it just 17 items and no time to reflect and discuss? So I just need to reflect more, and that's what I'm working on in 2017 is reflection.
What does that look like when you provide time for principals to reflect during principal meetings? A lot of PD, this is throughout my whole career, so I'm not talking about this year, but my entire career, you know, you sit and get, and you get so much information, probably by the end of the meeting, you're overloaded, you're not even really listening anymore because your mind just can't take it. So that space to breathe and reflect, what does that look like when you provide it for your leaders?
You can do a quick write where the leaders have to stop and reflect, and writing also is good for reflection. You can have a back channel like Padlet or another online tool, Today's Meet, that allows them to post their questions and thoughts along the way, and then you encourage them to use the back channel. You can stop and have them turn and talk to a neighbor. I found that if I have 15 principals in a room, they don't necessarily want to talk in whole group. But when we break it down to smaller groups, it's easy to reflect and talk, and you're less vulnerable than when you have to talk to the entire group. So I think small group activities are good. And then I also think sometimes you need to break it down by grade level, because what the elementary principals need to discuss isn't necessarily relevant to the high school principals. So there are various ways to do it. It's just a matter of making it part of the agenda. It's like intentionally planning with students, with understanding by design. What's the end in mind? What are your goals? And then how do you help the principals achieve those goals? And when you're planning those meetings, if all you're doing is planning the topics, then sometimes the reflection gets squeezed out. And I think for the first 15 years of my career, that's how I planned meetings. I sat down, I said, what are all the topics we need to address? I didn't think about what would happen in between topics or how the principals would reflect. I just ran principal meetings with about 15 to 20 topics, and we just tried to mow right through each one.
And what have you seen now that you've built in that reflection time with your leaders?
I'm in a new school district this year, so we're still working on the reflection piece in the new district, but I've been in central office roles for about 15 years. And when you build in time for reflection, they're more relaxed. They're more willing to ask questions. And it's like students. If the teacher's asking all the questions, who's doing the work? Once the students start asking each other questions, then you start really getting to the bottom of what you're trying to accomplish, and you start transferring the responsibility. Ultimately, they're going back to their school to lead a school, and you want to transfer that responsibility, so I don't need to be asking all the questions. So it's a beautiful thing when it works right and you provide time for it in the agenda. It doesn't just need to be an add-on for the last 10 minutes where you just squeeze it in, because at that point people are exhausted and ready to go.
You know, I've heard a theme of being relaxed too when it comes to the learning spaces with our students and the time for reflection for our leaders. Are there any other ideas or tips you have for the listeners around how to create these atmospheres where people are relaxed so they can give and offer their best work?
Well, you and I both are part of a Voxer group. That's how we met each other, was through Voxer. And I think building principals, assistant principals, and classroom teachers would all benefit from Voxer. It's an online app that you download on your phone or your device. And using Voxer, you can have a question of the week, or you could just have that partner or mentor that you talk to when you share ideas, when you're struggling, or when you have a great idea. And I think through Voxer, you're able to reflect, relax, rejuvenate, and then you're also able to plan forward, because you've got a, as we call it, a professional learning network. You've got a community of thought leaders who push you and challenge you to be better. And the principalship can be a role of isolation. You just feel like you're alone sometimes as a building principal. But with Voxer, you can communicate with people all over the United States and the world, and you can get ideas from what they're doing in their leadership journey, and that makes you better. It helps you sharpen the saw based on their leadership and the questions they ask you.
Stephen, how would you say you want to be remembered as a leader?
I want to be remembered as someone who added value to others. I really work hard on listening and adding value to others through education. That's my main role, is K-12 education. I want to help principals so the school with 800 students in it, the students are able to grow and they're able to graduate on time. I want to help the counselor. I want to help the parent who comes in my office and says they're a single parent and they're trying to help four kids graduate from high school. If I can add value to others, that's my contribution to education and hopefully to the world, because I feel like education has so many great ways we can reach others.
What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
I say John Maxwell, 360 Degree Leader. A 360-degree leader talks about how you lead up vertically, horizontally, and down. And you could be leading horizontally with the principals at your district level, but you may want to lead up with a state representative or with your superintendent. So how can you influence others by leading up? And how can you lead in your own school? And then how can you lead people in other school districts? So how can you lead those around you? And 360-degree leader is been a book that I've read about three times.
What do you do for fun, Stephen?
I do education for fun too most of the time. But I'm on Voxer quite a bit, and I'm in Twitter chats, and that helps me reflect. But it's all related to education. At one point, I was a college baseball umpire, so kind of my hobby was going to baseball games and being part of the game. But now I would say I go watch high school, college, and pro baseball anytime I get a chance. So baseball is my hobby, but that's seasonal. So in the wintertime, it's like that old Hall of Famer said, I just stare out the window and wait for spring.
That's funny. Who's your favorite team?
I like all the teams. People ask me that all the time. I like all the teams. In college baseball, I like UNC and Arkansas. So now I'm about 5 minutes away from Baum Stadium where the Razorbacks play. So I'll probably be found there quite a bit this spring.
Do you have a favorite major league player?
I like David Price. He was with the Durham Bulls when I was in the Durham, North Carolina area. And then he went up to the Tampa Rays. So he's on the Red Sox now, and I like him. But I have a lot of favorite players, and I just kind of – if my favorite player is playing, then that's the game I watch.
Right. That's a pitcher, right? Lefty?
Right. Yeah, he went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, he's a killer. I remember watching him for the Rays and the Red Sox. So this is a crazy question, but I love to ask it. What do you think your favorite toy was when you were 12 years old?
Probably Atari. We played Atari all day. Frogger, Pac-Man. I noticed yesterday on the Steelers game they did an analogy between the running back and Frogger. That was kind of taking me back to my childhood.
That was cool, yeah. Le'Veon Bell. Steven, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
I would start with the people who are in the school. So I'd start with the students and ask them about the learning space and what type of learning they would want. And then I would also work with the families and the teachers and the community. So it would have a lot of input. And I think schools are typically built based on a blueprint of how the last five schools were built, or based on a budget, rather than asking the students, what type of learning space do you want? I'd like to have indoor and outdoor learning space. I love schools that are close to a wooded area and they have an amphitheater, or they have a trail. They have places for exercise. They also have places where the class can go out and have class during nice weather. So indoor and outdoor learning space. And then I also would want to have technology, which is kind of a given these days. I don't think I'd want to go one-to-one. I think too many people are going one-to-one with a certain product. And once again, I think students need choice. If I want to make a video, I may need a certain device, but I may not need a laptop if I'm making a video. So if we give every student a laptop, it's almost the same as giving every student a textbook. We need to have multiple devices in a classroom. And then based on what I'm trying to accomplish as a student, I can move closer to that. And then finally, I'd want it to be personalized learning. And the best personalized learning I've seen is in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools. There's a lady named Jill Thompson that's a friend of mine, and schools from all over the United States have been going to Charlotte to take tours of their schools and see how they're implementing personalized learning. They started with a pilot of 15 schools, and then they had 15 schools each year. But I walked into a kindergarten classroom, and I saw 18 students doing 18 different things. And I always kind of thought that in my theory of education, that's what I'd want to see. But I never knew what it looked like till I visited Charlotte Mecklenburg schools.
Wow, that's great. So, yeah, I would definitely encourage all listeners, you know, to reach out there and maybe try to set up some type of site visit to see the personalized learning. Well, Steven, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You can contact me through Twitter. I'm at Curriculum Blog. I'm also a blogger on ASCD Edge. If you just type ASCD Edge plus Steven Weber, you'll find my blogs. And I'm just frequently in and out of Twitter chats. So hopefully we can connect at a Twitter chat or a national conference. And I'm the associate superintendent with Fayetteville Public Schools. So you can reach me in Fayetteville Public Schools. And if you're ever in the area, we'd love to give you a tour.
Listeners, you know that in the show notes, we'll have both of those linked up so you can get to Steven's Twitter and ASCD Edge articles. Well, Better Leaders, thank you so much for being a part of this show and listening. And remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Stephen. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Stephen in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Stephen, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.